Hello and welcome to the American Writers Museum Author Talks podcast, where we bring the power of the written word straight to your ears. This week, writers discuss their contributions to the anthology The Future of Black, Afrofuturism, Black Comics, and Superhero Poetry. The panel includes editors and contributors Tara Betts, Melissa James, Len Lawson, Cynthia Manick, and Craig Stevens, moderated by Eve L. Ewing. The following conversation originally took place May 15th, 2022, and was recorded live at the American Writers Festival.
Hello, everyone. Hello. My name is Noelle Velasco, and I'm one of the program coordinators at the American Writers Festival. I'd like to welcome you all to this program at the American Writers Festival. Our next program is presented in connection with our upcoming initiative, Dark Testament, a century of Black writers on justice, which uplifts the contributions Black writers have had on America in the period between the end of the Civil War and the beginning of the Civil Rights Movement. The Future of Black is an anthology of superhero poetry, comics, and stories dealing with Afrofuturist visions of the way the world will be. Its editors and contributors are here to talk about those visions. Moderating their discussion is Dr. Eve Ewing, the award-winning author of four books, the poetry collection Electric Arches and 1919. The nonfiction work Ghost in the Schoolyard, Racism and School Closing in Chicago Southside, and most recently, a novel for young readers, Maya and the Robot. Dr. Tara Betts is the author of Break the Habit, Arc and Hue, and the forthcoming Refuse to Disappear. She is the inaugural poet for the People Practitioner Fellow at University of Chicago and founder of Whirlwind Learning Center. Melissa James is an emerging writer and artist whose work explores Blackness, science, and theopoetics. In addition to The Future of Black, her work has appeared in the Black Liberation Blueprint, Gumbo Magazine, Edge Effects, and Blue Notes, an anthology of love, justice, and liberation. Future of Black editor Len Lawson is the author of Chime. He has earned fellowships from Tin House, Palm Beach Poetry Festival, and Virginia Center for Creative Arts, among others. His poetry appears in African American Review, Kalaloo, Mississippi Review, Ninth Letter, Verse Daily, and elsewhere. Future of Black editor Cynthia Manick is the author of No Sweet Without Brine, and author of Blue Hallelujahs. Manick is founder of the reading series Soul Sister Review. Craig Stevens is an artist academic that writes and curates rent themes of transcultural Blackness, freedom making, and radical solidarity. He is co-founder of the Black and African Solidarity Show and a doctoral student in Northwestern University Anthology Department. Dang. Welcome to you all.
Thank you all so much for being here. It's truly an honor to be in conversation with these incredible editors, contributors, poets, thinkers. I wondered if we could each begin with a reading, and I've asked each of the editors and contributors to either read something of their own from the anthology, or if they wish to share another favorite with us. So I'll turn it over to them, and maybe we'll start right here at the end with Len.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here. Glad to see everyone here. So I'm just going to start with one of the poems that I wrote from the anthology. This is a suite of poems about Amanda Waller. I'll try to keep this intro short, but if you're not familiar, Amanda Waller is in the DC Comics, a co-founder, or one of the founders, if not the founder, of the Suicide Squad. She is an African-American conservative at the highest levels of government. So there's an episode in one of the animated series from the Justice League in which Batman basically breaks into her home, and they have to have a very intense conversation. So this poem is called Amanda Waller Attracts a Bat. She awakes at 4:30 a.m. to click on the 24-hour conservative news and to scramble her attendants into position outside her estate. The black suits with earpieces prepare for her morning departure. All monitors are in place, displaying camera views at strategic angles. She has kept at bay an array of enemies like viruses who lust for her execution from shrewd international dealings in the name of patriotism and power. Yet, she may well be T'Challa rising in his palace before the dawn to witness nighttime's daily silent defeat. But this imminent foe is the night himself, undetectable by any lens, a vapor among shadows. Her intelligence, military science acumen, and bottomless war chest rival his own. In a stunning checkmate at their last encounter, she revealed to him that she knows his identity, prompting the billionaire in cape and cowl to succumb to her flame. Spiraling to the animal class of nocturnal flying insect from nocturnal flying mammal. What could his privileged desire from her that he could not righteously detect or ubiquitously procure? She cannot be intimidated by local police, brutality, or a callous criminal justice system. She has overcome the plagues of bone-grinding debt and ravaging poverty. From centuries of distributed wealth denied to her people, but hoarded by his with the same ruthless injustice and sinister business practices he attempts to thwart beyond his intimate obsession with the night. Perhaps it is this intrigue that brings him to her doorstep, to lust as her enemies do, to understand how she can excel in his domain of chess-like maneuvers on the world stage cloaked by the same shadows he adored first. To investigate how she hides her deeds of self-appointed justice in plain sight, within the belly and brain of the American government's capital without masquerading in costume, while he chooses to toil endless hours in a cave amid screeches of flying rodents who are attracted to the shadows as he is. Now it is her darkness that lures him to her grounds, her window, her sanctuary, her very shower, a glimpse of blackness in its rawest form, one weapon he cannot tuck into his utility belt. More darkness than he saw on his first night in the cave. But he is one with the night now, and hers before the dawn, invading her turf, planting his flag like any colonizer to prove he can.
I'm going to read this poem. It's based on Sasha from The Walking Dead.
My girl.
Yeah. I need to write a couple poems about her, but this is the one that's in the book. It's called Before Sasha Lights a Bonfire. When my brother gets bitten by a shell of a boy, a gun molds itself to my shoulder. Armor shatters, then crashes, sticks to organs, and weighs down my feet. I still keep moving. By the time I bury Tyrese, I am used to digging. I've watched him cut through hungry stumblers, rasps and rotting gone silent and fallen. Tyrese picked flowers and cradled babies in the trunks of his arms. I knew if we both survived every crumbling wall, each collapsed fence, he and I would look at each other, laugh, and remember. Instead, I lose him after losing Bob and his jokes to slow, rabid dementia pressed from undead teeth. Understand why I hunt walkers, mow them down, quiet, relentless half screams, pile them in a pit and then fall on their bodies. Their decomposing becomes a smell that no longer fazes me. While my back rests on the huddled mess, on my back, I look up at the clouds. Unbelievably, the whites still break and float in clear blue. Maybe I can cry now, maybe for a minute.
Hello, everyone. I'm going to read a poem by the lovely Yona Harvey.
Yes.
It's called Q. One of the four royal stars is watching over me. Yeah, I'm blessed in these times of nervous weather. The leaves chill in a bundle, then scatter like police off to the next doorstep. They don't step, they don't faze me. These jeans can hold three men, but it's just one of me. Girl, only sun, only sound, only seer. All this green to gold to red to orange is just theater. I'm the real. Keep your eyes on the navigator of snow and infinite gray. I rock these boots all year. What a storm got to do with me? Who knows the number of strolls to heaven? Not that I'm thinking on it. The heavens know my real name, but you can call me Q. Quicker than Q, but anyway, certain things a man keeps to himself, Jesus wept, so I don't. The past is for people who like to play things over and over. Me, I'm on the next song. Listen to my own head symphony, to the royal stars, the colors, they thrill me, they fuel these legs.
Hey everybody, my name's Craig, and I'll share my poem, As It Is in Heaven, which was included in the volume. And a lot of my work is inspired by pursuits of meaning, especially through practice. And I just really love the way that Black people curate experiences of joy for themselves. And so I was working on a couple of exhibitions at this time, one on the Negro Motors Green Book, another on change makers of the 20th century. And I was doing a lot of archival image research and was really inspired just by the visuals that I was getting. And so I wrote this poem kind of out of that process of how I understand the heaven that I manifest for myself. So it goes. As it is in heaven, thus my path is written. I am serious. My descent from that cosmic star was no accident. My emergence into a Babylon of deception and disrepair is far from chance. My resonance with abundance reveals who I am. Mr. Black Atlantic, child of Kronos, guided by the rings of Saturn, a prodigy of the Most High, I exhale my mind into matter. And I've learned that when nothing is mine, the more I have, and for many lifetimes, this soul has been stripped bare. Broken, naked, utter despair, displaced, erased, defaced, but it was there that we were immortalized into stone. And now, wherever upon this land I roam, I am home, Sankofa. But just how far back can I return? How many of my past can I unearth? How much of my conditioning can I unwork? How deep into the soil can I reinter? How much heaven can I endure? How much love can I sow into the earth so that even if I never touch the fruits of my work, my child's child will never taste this hurt? For I stand on the shoulders of gaseous explosions, heaven's soldiers who traversed oceans and through their motions they reversed the current. So I ride the tide back on home. I ride the wind back within. Through breath, the revolution begins.
Hi, everyone. My name is Melissa James. Also very delighted to be on this panel with some amazing folks. And I'm going to read my piece, which is titled, Why Black Women Write Horror Stories, a not quite fictional survey of Black female horror writers in the US. And it starts with a quote. I'm thinking a lot about how I use Afrofuturism in terms of processing trauma as a horror writer. The piece of it that most attracts me is how to take evil and create a sort of funhouse mirror image of it. That is not the thing itself, but a visual or written expression of a thing that is frightening or frightful, and creating survivors. Tanana Reeve Du. Black women write horror stories because US history should be told as a scary story, because slavery was a living nightmare, because generations of Black people survived mass kidnapping, physical and psychological torture, rape and murder, and systemic dehumanization, because look at where we find ourselves today. Black women write horror stories because Black people still fear for their lives, because white people are still afraid of their own shadows, because most folks refuse to actually look in the mirror, because they want good and evil to be black and white. Black women write horror stories because we have to exorcise these demons, because it isn't just all in our heads, because the monsters we have to face are real. Because this country fed upon the flesh and blood of our ancestors to bring itself to life. Black women write horror stories because black women have seen some scary shit. Because it isn't safe to be black or female. Because the past isn't dead even if it's been buried. Because the future could be even scarier. Black women write horror stories because these are the lessons that black kids need to learn. Because what you don't know can get you killed. Because happy endings don't tell the hard truths. Because there's no sense in lying about it. Black women write horror stories because we are the hopes of our mothers. Because we are the mothers of hope. Because we know how to find our way in the dark. Because we've done this before. Black women write horror stories because it's time to write the rights. It's time to right the wrongs that have been done to us, because this is how we help our people make it out alive, because we have always been our own greatest heroes, because telling our stories just might change history.
Wow. Thank you so much to each of you for sharing that tremendous work. I think that if you talk to 10 different Afrofuturists, you'll get 15 different understandings of Afrofuturism. But as the title of this collection suggests, this volume has a focus specifically on black superheroes and comics. And Len, in your introduction, you wrote, and I'm quoting here, "I had a vision to track that pilgrimage with Afrofuturism and poetry back to those places I left behind as a kid, in front of the TV, in the classroom, at the library." I wonder if whosoever of you feels moved to do so could talk about why pop culture is an important anchor for this book and for the vision of Afrofuturism that emerges from this anthology. What is it about pop culture?
I appreciate the question. I think that's a way or the gateway right now that Afrofuturism is, I guess, trending, and I hate to use that word, but it's a pretty exciting time for it right now, where the superhero space in film, in music, in it's every aspect of the arts. So, but that's really just one facet of Afrofuturism, but it's usually where people come in. Mm-hmm. So for me, that's been part of my existence for, since I was a kid, like you quoted from the intro there, just, watching these cartoons, these movies, wanting to be those people on the screen, and just living vicariously through people wearing capes and tights. It's like, it's got to be better than what I'm living right now. So that's usually how people come into Afrofuturism. But then once you get behind that curtain, it's an entire like culture, philosophy, religion that some people may believe in, and it's multi-layered than just that. So I mean, that's why this title is as long as it is, because it's a piece that everybody likes to look at, but beyond that, there's more to be discovered, I think.
I will say that, popular culture is how we reflect what we know, how we reflect our understanding of the world. I think as children, we don't have the architectural or belief. So as children, we think anything is possible. We can imagine the sun is following us. We can imagine we could be Storm. We can be Wolverine. All we got to do is grow our nails long enough. So as children, we already have that sort of futuristic thinking without even knowing it. But as we get older, that ability to imagine what's possible sort of gets lost. And I think now that ability has returned in terms of questioning the who, the how, and where we could be. Even imagining the ends of films, putting our own stamp on the remix, remixing how we got here. What if we were here before? Exploring those answers and those questions is how I think people are diving into Afrofuturism, because it's more about imagining or reimagining a future, and then without any limits.
Len and Cynthia, you put out such an amazing editorial vision for this book, and it shows. And I'm curious for Les, Tara, and Craig, if you could each talk about why that vision spoke to you, and how you think about your broader artistic project as a poet, as a person, and how Afrofuturism fits within that.
I know for me, I was really interested in this project because there's probably been a couple of other, just two anthologies that looked at comic book caros in particular. And I was in one of them and I submitted because I said, I bet you they won't have black superheroes in it. And I kept thinking, I said, and do I want them to write a poem where they represent it in a way that doesn't make me feel comfortable if they're not right, if they are writing about black superheroes? So I thought a lot about that, but then I was also thinking about, we're in this really interesting time where now science fiction, comic books are starting to look more like how people actually look in the real world, you know, which was one of the things I loved about The Walking Dead in particular. And we, even that needs to be unpacked, right? Like, are we creating these things where we realistically see each other in the future? Because when I was a kid, we would, you know, you knew what the horror movie trope was, is the black person dies first. Right. And then the other trope when you looked at science fiction movies is that I guess there are no black people in the future, right?
The Jetsons. We're not there.
We not in the Jetsons, you know. But also, too, I kept thinking of that idea of the alien, right? Like, the alien kind of stands in for people of color in so many old science fiction stories. And I was like, nah, we're doing a whole other thing. People are going to be whole, full characters in this future now. So I said, this book has the opportunity to do that. That's going to be exciting, you know? And, you know, I knew one of the editors. I knew Cynthia, and I had been social media friends with Lynn, and I said, oh, they're doing it? So then I got really excited again and said, I'm definitely sending poems, and I'm excited to see who else is in it.
Yeah, for me, I get really inspired by radical imaginations. And for Afrofuturism, for me, it's about imagining landscapes of freedom that often are very different from the current existence, so divergent futures. And I guess by day, I'm an archaeologist. I work in Liberia. I study the Back to Africa migrations. And those are peoples who... So Back to Africa migrations, it's a process in which I often see myself within these peoples who were seeking to pursue a land of freedom, to create this landscape of abolition and to repatriate and reintegrate themselves, their diasporic selves, into an African way of life. And so they settled in Liberia, or the land that became Liberia. And in this process of me being able to excavate the settlements, their homes, and the ways that their descendants made place is a really intimate process of seeing myself in the past and kind of working towards them from the present to pursue divergent futures. And I love that aspect of Afrofuturism, seeing it in our ancestors, seeing it in ourselves, and the way that that will be held by our children and our descendants. And so just this idea of superheroes, as us being superheroes, as people who have this power to manifest and to alchemize our situation into something beautiful, I loved the opportunity to contribute to that, because that's really the kind of thought process that guides all of the work that I do.
And I would say for me, I had a chance to hear Cynthia and Len, I think it was the one of your Instagram community reads, and someone was mentioning that this anthology felt like a place for misfit poems, in terms of, you know, we all write in celebration of various heroes, characters, in conversation with these ideas, but it had not occurred to me that there would be a good place. And my poem in particular was actually, I guess, part of a kind of internal conversation that I was having after watching a panel on Afrofuturism. And it was very much me kind of internalizing. I had this light bulb moment when someone, you know, was saying, you know, black horror is black history. Black history is black horror. Again, this notion that basically runs through the piece that I read. And, you know, it took me a while, but I had to process that. So, and after doing that, it was not the kind of piece that I could see getting published, especially in, you know, some of the, I'll say, more mainstream venues. And so it was really nice to find someplace that this poem would fit.
Thank you so much. I want, Linda, do you want to add something?
I was going to say, Cynthia, you need to trademark that phrase about, what was it, the misfit poems?
Yeah. The B-side poems. The B-sides.
The B-sides.
Yeah. We all have these poems that they're weird and gorgeous. No one wants to publish them, but we love them.
Yes.
Because we're so nerdy. They're all scattered about the universe.
Yes.
Put them in one place.
One day they'll come together across the parallel universes of reality and form a super team. So I want to make sure that we leave some time for audience questions. I'm going to ask just a little bit more. One thing that was really interesting is that many of the poems in this anthology will be new to folks, but there are also some classics in here that you got some pretty, you kind of stunted on us with the reprint permissions. So there's poems from Lucille Clifton, Nikki Giovanni, Gil Scott-Heron. I wonder how, if anyone feels like chiming in on how viewing those familiar voices, familiar poems in the context of this anthology invites us to see that work differently. I'm looking at you, Dr. Betts, because I know you think a lot about these things, but open to anybody.
You know, I was so excited that Lucille Clifton's Superman poems were in this collection.
It's the B-side poem.
Right.
Yeah.
It
like,
is.
A lot of people, cut. I think they're primarily in the Book of Light, right? And I think a lot of people slept on that book because she has a poem about, she has a lot of biblical poems in there. And so she plays a lot with characters in that book, and people kind of skipped over that. But she also has a poem about MOVE organization that a lot of people don't talk about. Mm-hmm. And critics have gracefully jumped over it. And I'm like, yeah, you don't want to talk about the poem where she gets a little radical in a way that doesn't make you feel like she's sweet and motherly. And I think she bucked against that, too. If you met her in person, she's like, yeah, I'm a mom, but don't get it twisted. But the other thing I really was excited about, because these older poems are talking about these realities of not having the superhero the way we could have been or the way we would have imagined it. Like, I always think about Gil Scott-Heron saying, there's no such thing as a Superman. But by the time the hip-hop era came around, I can't remember who the rapper was that did it, but it was a hip-hop song called Black Superman. And in it, he's talking about the things a lot of people do to survive in a Black community, whether they want to do them or not. And, you know, he's saying, basically, he's like, to my mama, I'm a Superman. I'm the Black Superman. And I was like, wow. By the time I heard that in the 90s, I was like, yeah. Like, we're re-envisioning this thing. We thought we couldn't be it.
Somebody Google it.
Mm-hmm. Huh?
Yeah, who's a hip-hop head in the audience who knows the answer to that?
I think he had a line in it. He says, I have my game locked up tight. Huh?
Above the law.
Yes, that's who it was.
A free book to the gentleman in the red hat.
For real.
Well done, sir.
You know, but it's really important that we see that it was an evolution of thought, right? And that we've seen these evolutions of these characters. Like, the only thing I wish I had thought about, if I had wrote something new for this book, I probably would have wrote a poem about Danielle Cage, which is the daughter of Jessica Jones and Luke Cage. Because I think we're going to have to complicate these narratives a little bit even more. Like, it's like, okay, now we got them in the story. How can we talk about these stories where things start to overlap and get a little bit more complicated, right? Because Danielle has all these powers, and if you've been reading Jessica Jones, the Purple Man starts to, like, see elements of himself in Danielle Cage because she's mixed race. Mm-hmm. Or at least that's what people used to call it. I hope I didn't, you know.
Well, that might have to be volume two, right? Because to your point about Lucille Clifton, sometimes we hit. Yeah, I mean, that make it happen, publishers.
Yes, volume two.
Volume two. Because I think to your point about Lucille Clifton, people often have very flat ideas about what they want comic book characters to be, right? What they want Black superheroes to be, and very flat ideas about what they want Black poets to be. So,
right.
So I'm ready for volume two.
Eve Ewing has spoken.
With that, I would love to leave a little bit of time for questions from the audience. And I'm sure that our editors and contributors would be down to just answer any type of nerdy questions you have if you're not trying to do the deep cut poetry craft questions, but they could do those too. But
no
we
judgment.
Have a microphone if you don't mind stepping to the mic. I know it's like
she's like it's too far away.
I know
she's like
far.
She's thinking about
I
it.
I apologize.
She's thinking about it.
Noel, our superhero Noel is going to bring the mic to you. So kind.
Thank you. Noel. Yeah. Come on, Noel.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Yes, hello. My question is, as someone mentioned before, as you become an adult, you sort of lose touch with your imagination. So as you all are preparing to write a poem, how do you all become in touch with your imagination? Like, what's your method? What's your training? Or, like, how do you get yourself in that state of mind?
Oh, I'll go first with that one. For me, it's asking questions that no one wants to ask. What are the stars doing when I can't see them? Are the washer and dryer friends or coworkers? This thing, you know, questions that no one else was going to ask, but I will ask. And so that gets me to writing a poem. That gets me to that space of creativity. And also listening to music. Listening to music and their words and wondering, you know, why does this beat feel this way and that beat feels this way? And thinking about the way colors are made. Sometimes you, and also how do you fold a fitted sheet? Questions like these will make me write a poem because I can't answer those questions.
Please write that poem.
I'll do another poem in spite of those questions. So I think it's asking yourself questions of the world, of the mundane, and then asking questions also a little bit fantastical.
I would agree. I tell a lot of students when I'm trying to get them to think speculatively and when I'm just trying to get them to write a poem to read Pablo Neruda's Book of Questions for that reason. But often I feel like there's something that's just like an itch or a bother or a worry and it won't leave me alone or it's a story I keep telling and I'm like verbally and I'm like, this is the poem. It just won't, it's just taking up too much space. It's leaving the light on at night. It's just being obnoxious. And I'm like, okay, I see you. So now I need to start putting you on paper and figuring out what you look like. Like, for example, I keep thinking of when Sasha finally commits suicide, which I hope I didn't spoil
yeah,
it
spoiler.
For anybody. I spoiled. But in the scene where she does, she's listening to Donny Hathaway. So for me as a Chicago girl in many respects, it made me cry. And I keep thinking about it because it's like, if you have to go into a future that looks like it is so bleak, which we've kind of been thinking about a lot for the past 2 years. Mm-hmm. It's like, how do you want to go out, you know? And it's like, what choices do you want to make? And I think science fiction in particular and speculative fiction makes you kind of ask these hard questions. Like, what would you do in a hard situation? How could you envision your way out of it? And I think poems do that too. You know, a lot of times people want you to write a poem that's just write what you know. But a poem can be a blueprint for writing something new. And I hope that, you know, when you look at poems, you guys think of that, or if you're writing your own poems, think about that.
Yeah, I think you said it much better than I could. But it, for me, it's, I love the framing of questioning. I always think of it for, I like the word wrestling, to borrow some of the biblical implications, but wrestling with an idea or just something, you know, that foil that challenges you, even the thought, the emotion, whatever it is that I need to process. And I think I have a very loose definition of poetry. I mean, you know, like mine was basically like, it's a list poem, right? But even that can get me into the space where I can be with the question or the idea without necessarily trying to solve it. At the same time, I think there's, you know, something going on at a deeper level that you can trust to not necessarily solve the question or the idea, but get the poem to where it needs to go. And so, in a word, I could call it very therapeutic in terms of just, trying to find my own way through, you know, a lot of the issues of today.
I think we can squeeze in one final question, especially if it's like a lightning round question. With the hat here in the delightful coral colored shirt? Yes.
Thank you. So I'm going to take you out to a different place, I think. Melissa, it's good to see you. I've been sitting here and I've been spacing because in this room, this is a room celebrating war and American, quote, hero, unquote, with our flags and our emblems. And if you see all of the, I know writers can't see it, I know you can't see it, but what we're looking at is the names of some battles and places like Cedar Creek and March to the Sea. And I'm wondering, for the futurist, how could we change this space?
I think we are changing it. We're bringing poetry in this space. We're bringing Black history to this space. We're bringing new visions to this space. And I think in constantly having those things every week, every month, every year, we overtake the space. Actually, no, he had a question. I know, like, we're running out of time, but he's been very earnest.
Oh, I apologize, yes.
No, yeah. It's okay. Oh, you have to get up, Lee, with the coral hat. We appreciate you.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you. That was very kind.
Are there any publications or, like, podcasts that you get for a horror fix?
A horror fix, yes. For the horror fans in the room, and for those of you who were in the earlier conversation with Ashley Ford, this is the second time this has come up, so where's the Black Women's Horror Anthology? Obviously, it needs to come out. But horror fix, podcasts, TV shows.
I'm not the expert on that. I have memories of being a kid and like watching Aliens. I have this particular memory of like, you know, my family, like I think it was Thanksgiving and Aliens 3 had come out. So we had dinner and then like went to go see the movie. And then just seeing, you know, things like Get Out and Us and Lovecraft and all of those things resonate for me, you know, and at the same time, I can't say that I'm necessarily an expert in that space. Just, again, me trying to process it.
Go ahead, Tara.
I'll be quick. I really love horror anthology movies. That's my jam. So the ones more recently that I liked, I've been enjoying the Creepshow series.
I knew you were going to say Creepshow.
Creepshow is my jam. And the new ones are good. The new ones are on Shudder.
They're very creepy.
And they had... the one from childhood that I love is Tales from the Dark Side. And it used to be on WGN for the Chicago people, who remember. And it would come on Sunday nights after my parents put me to bed, and I would sneak and watch it. And just be like, okay, I've turned the TV so the angle of the TV light won't show on the doorway.
Go to bed!
Yeah.
Turn the TV off!
Yeah, that happened a couple times. But Tales from the Dark Side, there might be episodes on YouTube or something. But and Kareem Abdul-Jabbar was on an episode too. I remember that. I can't remember who else, but it was a good show.
Since we're talking about B-sides, I have to also give a shout out to B-movies. If there are any Svengoolie fans in the audience, it's a hyper local. I love Svengoolie, and I never get to go anywhere and talk about how much I love Svengoolie.
Okay,
so.
Can I just say, I'm gonna be bad. If you meet Svengoolie, can we figure out a way to meet him together?
Because that's
my childhood dream.
Also.
You know,
Svengoolie anthology poems.
You know, Richard Coles, if you know him,
yes.
Get him together with
Chicago
us.
Chicago broadcasting icon. Noelle is going to be very mad at us, and she's been very kind. So thank you all so much.
Noelle.
Please join me in a kind round of applause for...
Thank you for listening to this episode of the AWM Author Talks podcast. Next week, bestselling author Nicole Chung discusses her new memoir, A Living Remedy. Now go, be inspired, and find the mind of a writer in yourself.